Hello, this is Chris from the Connecticut Crossroads Project, as well as
Alex.
And if you could just tell us your name and how long you've lived here, please.
My name is Paula Deek Shushani, and I moved to Bridgewater in early December of 1962. My family built a home on Curtis Road, and I became quick friends with the child that lived to the direct right of my parents' property. And as soon as we moved in, Cheska came running up, and she was like fascinated. She's 2 years older than me. And to this day, we still talk every week. It's a cool thing. And there was a photograph in one of those binders over there that was absolutely thrilling because it tied so much into my childhood, her childhood. And we were both very connected to Alice Rothschild. Very connected to her.
And who is Alice Rothschild?
Alice Rothschild was the head librarian during my childhood. And she actually lived right down the street from us on Hemlock Road. And the photograph of Cheska and Paul Underwood was in, I think, 64, when Cheska would have been 12. So I asked Chris if he would make a copy of that so that I could forward this to Cheska. Oh my God, she was elated. She was absolutely thrilled to receive that. The Bridgewater Library was a very formative part of my childhood. After I did my chores on Saturdays, I'd get a pocket full of change, I'd go to the Bridgewater store, I'd get some penny candy, and I'd head over here, and I'd hang out with Alice Rothschild, Hyla Coleman, Hannah Hilb, and Mrs. Rothschild was absolutely a phenomenal lady. I don't know if you're familiar with Alice Rothschild at all.
I just know stories of her, so please tell us
about
her.
Oh my God, gracious lady. She was very kind, she was very generous with her time, she was gracious. She taught me how to put the index cards into the index drawers, the brass rod through the cards, which was fascinating. She taught me about the Dewey Decimal System. She would select specific books, and she would read to us. And she was just a phenomenal lady. And she was the reason why I became very interested in classical music as a small child. And there was lots to read here. And she'd say, oh, you'd probably find this very interesting, you know? And
did they have records here for you to take out?
I don't recall that. She had a ton at her home. So she would give me the background, and then I could go there, and then I could listen to her library in Kettering.
Can you describe the library at that point in time?
Back then, I thought this place was immense. I was so stunned when I came back to visit that it's like this really cool, quaint, small library. But I thought it was gigundous. I really and truly did. And I would come in and I would go over into, I guess the side area is where the Charles Adams illustrations and books were. I was fascinated with Charles Adams from the Adams family. There was a lot of those, and there was tons and tons of different directions and different books to go into. And I'm an avid reader, and I love to just read everything that I can get my hands on that I'm going to be able to glean some information about. Yeah.
Was the it was the same layout, the adult room upstairs and the children's room downstairs?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Were there stacks in this main reading room? Do you remember?
Stacks.
Like bookshelves?
Yes, actually there were. Yes, there were. And the Burnham School, we came over weekly.
Mm-hmm.
And our classes would come over, and we would sit in a big circle downstairs, and she would read us a book. And it was like, oh my God, it was like a fascinating time for us to line up and come down the sidewalk and go into the downstairs level. And I was telling Jean that the tree that's on the side of the school over there, we thought this tree was gigundous, you know? And it's like, and I said to my friend, Jermaine, who I've known since second grade, because that's when I moved here. I said, oh my God, Jermaine, remember how big we thought that tree was? I mean, my God, it's like a pencil. And she started laughing and she goes, I'll have to pay attention to that the next time I go to the fair. So, yeah. Yeah.
So the school still comes over, but it's once a month now.
Oh, okay.
Well, they have their own library. Mm.
They do?
Yeah, they have their own library and they're small. Really? It's in one of the classrooms downstairs of the old building. But yeah, it's still
interesting.
Do you think that that's a good community builder, having the kids come over to the library?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Without question.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just so much information on all of these shelves that they couldn't possibly recreate what this library contains.
Right.
And the interaction with the with Mrs. Rothschild was so wonderful. Oh my God, she was an amazing lady.
Did you know her much outside of the library? Mm-hmm, or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I used to walk down to where she lived and visit her in her home.
Oh wow.
Yeah, she lived to be 105, I believe. Yeah, she was an amazing lady, and she drove this little Peugeot, and she was a very tiny lady.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd see that maroon Peugeot go up the street, and you'd see these little knuckles and this little head, and she'd be driving up this way. She was great.
She lived in that house in the corner of Hemlock, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So can you describe the community of Bridgewater when you moved here, what it was like, what the town was like?
It was wonderful. The village store was owned by Don and Eleanor Gowan.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very, very much involved with the community. And the store had these wonderful oak and glass candy counters. Oh my God, it was amazing. You go in and there was just any kind of candy that you could possibly even dream of, you know, was inside of that. It was wonderful. And the wood floors, and they had a daily gathering of older men. Was it the Cracker Barrel Club or I forget, there's a name for it, because I also shared pictures with my friend Lynn Von Eggety, whose brother Walter Von Eggety is a local artist, mm-hmm. lives down the street here. And there was a picture of Lynn's father in his younger days, and he was at the Bridgewater store with Don Gowan, and there was another gentleman that was there. So I, after you had sent me the pictures, I snapped a picture of it, and I sent it on Facebook to Lynn. She was thrilled. She goes, oh my God. And he had appeared in Mr. Schnicker, something or other. It's in one of those binders. He was into theatrics.
Mm-hmm.
So she was like so thrilled that I got this information and I was sharing it with them. Yeah.
Was there a very strong connection between people in town when you moved in? I mean, did everybody pretty much know each other?
Oh, goodness, yes. Everybody knew everybody. And because it's a small town,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's the Stewart family was very, very a big integral part of the town of Bridgewater,
mm-hmm.
because the Stewart family is quite large,
mm-hmm.
and most of the family lives on Christian Street. That's where the Shallowbrook Farm is that Billy Stewart owns, and all of his family pretty much lived in that area. Or the upper part of Main Street. Ollie Williams and Donnie Williams, they're tied into the Stewart family. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. As a matter of fact, I have a lot of friends on Facebook who live in other areas of the States, and they like to chat about their childhood memories, you know. Like Bruce Spacciarotella lived here on Warner Road with his family, and he and I chat all the time. And I was saying, oh my God, Bruce, do you remember when Mary and I hid in the back of your Volkswagen and we scared the heck out of you? And he goes, oh my God, how I didn't collide with that tree. I'll just never know. You know, it's like, yeah. Oh, yeah. We used to have a lot of fun, you know. And you felt safe. You didn't have to lock your doors, mm-hmm. you know, that type of thing. And you could be outside and chase after the lightning bugs and walk down to the neighbors' houses, a few houses down. And you didn't feel threatened. On the street that I grew up on, Curtis Road, everybody lived there just about their entire lives.
Oh, wow.
And I still keep in touch with Mary Sullivan, who lives directly across the street from where my family's home is. Mm-hmm. And I was asking her questions because I knew that her in-laws were very involved in, they had farmed on that property for a good long while. And she explained to me that her mother-in-law's family, the Rowans, had actually owned pretty much all of Curtis Road.
Wow.
And they had a farm called Clover Knoll. Mm-hmm. And then at some point in the late 50s, Lynn Von Eggety's father purchased a big plot of land, and he had the Levon Farms, where he had the Swiss Chalet.
Oh, wow.
And they're beautiful, beautiful cows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're gleaning white, and I forget, was it Hercules? I'm trying to remember now what Lynn was saying. There was one particular male cow that they showed all the time at the Danbury Fair. And when he was preened and gleaned and shining bright, and she said, and he was a gentle giant. He was a gentle giant. Levon Farms, yeah. And, yeah, so... Everybody that lived on the street had lived there pretty much all of their lives.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, do you remember Mr. Farnham? Was he still selling?
Oh my God, yes. Okay. And he had a mule that was up on
Remus,
yes. Yes, absolutely.
Did you buy
Absolutely. Yeah, he was a cool, cool guy. And it was on the trust system, you know, where you would take something, you would pay for it. And as a matter of fact, there's a group of friends who are recalling their childhood. And what was the name of that little guy that had that little stand? They live in Roxbury, Washington area. They would come through here to go to Danbury.
So not to destroy your image of Mr. Farnham, however, there was a bell that whenever you opened the door, it rang inside.
Oh, that's cool.
I know the woman who lives there now, mm-hmm. and she was telling me that it was all set up when they moved in, and everybody's mm-hmm. always like, oh, it was on the trust system,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't.
Well, that's, but you know what, hey, and you know, you have to really be proactive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, you read about so much where you have these farmers that have their stands, and they have the milk and the insulated coolers there, and people have been ripping them off.
It's too bad. Like,
yeah, that's nasty.
Now, are you related to the Deeks who live up in Mariel?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. That's my, that is my grandfather's, let's see, which ones are you talking about? Because there's a couple of different families.
So, I went to school with Billy.
Oh, yeah, Billy, yeah. Yeah, he's my father's cousin.
Okay, mm-hmm. And then I just knew there's the Deek farm up
yes,
there.
Yes, that's his father and
okay.
mother's farm.
Do they still own the farm?
No.
Okay.
No. My grandfather, Victor, his brother was John, and they married sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And so my grandfather married Margaret, and John married her younger sister, Caroline.
Okay.
Yeah. And they had this cool farm, this cool vegetable stand, and everybody knew, you know, their farm stand. Yeah. Yeah.
So what brought you to Bridgewater? I mean, did your parents just decide that they didn't want to be in New Milford, or?
My father had, he began working for Kimberly-Clark when they came to the area in 1958. And we lived in New Milford in a very small house, and our family was growing.
Right.
And at the time that we moved here, my mother was, let's see, she was pregnant with my sister Susan, who was born in March of 62. So she was very pregnant when we moved here in December. And he wanted to have a community where we could be able to run and frolic and not have to worry about anything, you know. And living in Bridgewater was like really an idyllic place to grow up in, and yeah. And every child that I have as a friend had the exact same thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a wonderful, wonderful, yeah. Yeah, you felt very stable, very secure.
Mm-hmm.
So as a matter of fact, the property that my parents bought was from the Grandma Sullivan's sister, Madaw. She owned the opposite side of the road.
Is this from Grace Madaw?
Yeah. No, it's a different Madaw family.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Let's see, was her name Mary? I'm trying to remember now. I can't, isn't that awful? But, Ruth Sullivan's sister, like I said, their parents owned pretty much all of Curtis Road.
Okay.
And then it was divided up when the parents died,
right.
And, the sister had the opposite side of the road. And up to up Henry Sanford, almost up to is it Clatter Valley Road that intersects with Henry Sanford? I don't recall.
No, I don't believe so. I can't remember.
There's a little side road off of Henry Sanford Road. So if you go up Henry Sanford Road in the first right,
yeah,
that takes you down into Clatter Valley. Mm. She owned all the way up to that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
On that corner.
Yeah. Mm?
That's crazy.
Yep.
So you left Bridgewater eventually?
Yes. I graduated from high school in 72, and I worked for 6 months at the nursing home next to the hospital in New Milford. And then I applied to work at the phone company. And I got a job there in January of 73. So I worked for the phone company in New Milford until they closed in the early 80s. I think it was 81 when I moved to Danbury. I had lived at home until, let's see, 75, 70. I got my first car in 75 because I had to save up funding. So I got my first car. That's when I left the Bridgewater area and I moved to New Milford. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I'm just trying to think of key points. So, how about the fair? I mean,
fair is like the backbone of the community. You know, it's like that was one thing that everybody was involved with in some capacity. And my father was very involved with the Bridgewater Fire Department.
Mm-hmm.
So I would help out at the ticket booths, selling tickets, and oh my God, it was fascinating. It was just like, oh my God, it's so different now.
Right.
But back then, each ride had its own booth, and you would sell the tickets for that particular ride.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's like one big booth, and you just buy strips. And,
right.
Yeah, yeah. So husking corn for the barbecue chicken. My father would go and get all the corn.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He would go around and he would put the signs out, you know, when the bridge, those big, humongous signs that they put out that, you know, the country fair is, da-da-da-da. Yeah. But it's changed so much because the, you know, my children and I still come each year. We come one day. And I have not seen hide nor hole or of anyone that I know. If I say to my friend Jermaine, you know, I'm going to be going on a Saturday or Sunday, you know, can you and Tom? Yeah, and we'll look around and it's just like, wow, no. Mm-mm.
Well, on that point, I mean, how have you seen, how's Bridgewater changed for you? I mean, I know you don't live in town anymore.
Mm-hmm, right?
So,
mm-hmm.
How has it changed?
Well, there's a lot more people who are like weekenders, mm-hmm. that come and find how beautiful Bridgewater is. And they have now become the new generation and the new face of what Bridgewater actually is. I mean, there's still families that are still very steeped in the community, but it's very different now. on Curtis Road, at the corner where Henry Sanford goes all the way down to Lake Lulunona, yeah. Mike Nichols had lived there for many, many years. And Cheska and I were laughing, and she was saying, oh my God, do you remember seeing all those limousines and cars going down Henry Sanford? And yeah, you know.
Were there many famous people who lived in town when you were growing up?
Yep. Mike Nichols lived, like I say, he lived there for quite some time. I think he may have moved in like the 90s or mm-hmm. perhaps even early 2000, because he and Diane Sawyer were there for a good long while. up the street from me on Curtis Road, what was her? There was an actress that lived in the Monroe House at the very end of Curtis. Teresa Wright had lived there. And I absolutely adore Teresa Wright movies. Oh my God. Shadow of a Doubt. What's another Teresa Wright movie? I can't think of it now, but she was a very gracious lady. There was a big field that was open field that was hayed for, I don't know if Billy Stewart was haying the field at that point, we would go up there and we would, you know, just run through the field and you could see forever. I mean, you could see right into New Melford, for goodness sake, because it's that high up.
Is it that that gable front colonial, the white one?
On the left-hand side, it's the very last house.
Okay.
There's a new, like a prefab type mm-hmm. house, but it's that. It's,
yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's gorgeous, gorgeous
house.
It's
a really
pretty house. Yeah, it is. Absolutely gorgeous. Yep.
Was Vanwick Brooks still alive when you...
Vanwick Brooks had died shortly, and I was so small at that point too, so I wouldn't have been familiar, but that very ornate house on the corner with the wrought iron, or not wrought iron, it's a very elaborate house, yeah, on the corner there, and that house was actually built by the Hatch brothers, who are relatives to my Aunt Vivian.
Okay.
Yeah, so related by... kind of like by marriage, so
was
to speak.
Was this the same Hatch that had the farm on Hatch Road, like right off of 67?
No.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, well, I had asked my Aunt Vivian about that, and she said, I think we may be somehow related, mm-hmm. but not directly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because my grandfather told a number of stories of pranking that.
Oh,
farm.
Interesting.
In fact, I believe they stole his car and brought it downtown.
All righty then. Okie doke. That's funny. That's funny. Yeah. And then there was Madame Van Lennep.
Okay.
And she was quite a character. She was a Southern belle, and she was very moneyed, and she lived the upper part of Main Street on the left hand side. There's a humongous long house. There's a swimming pool inside.
Okay.
We used to call it the Walker residence, but that's where she lived.
Okay.
And she was a pip. She was a real pip. And she was in a rehab situation when I was working at the nursing home. from December, from June of 72 until December of 72. Mm-hmm. And she was there, and the staff was terrified of her. I was a dietary aide. They were terrified of her. So after, you know, breakfast and lunch were served, you know, I'd be folding the napkins and the linens and whatever, and she'd wheel herself out, and we would sit and we would chat. And she says, "You're not afraid of me, are you?" And I said, "No, should I be?" And she said, "Well, everybody else does, you know, everybody else is." And I said, "Well, you know, no, no, you're not scared of me at all." And she was a really cool lady, and she had a lot of really interesting stories. And yeah, I really enjoyed talking to her. She was fascinating.
What was her story? I mean,
She had grown up. She was a Southern Belle. She grew up in South Carolina, okay. And she was married to a very wealthy. I believe they were Dutch. Yeah, and they settled here.
Okay.
And yeah.
What? So I mean, speaking of sort of characters, if you Bridgewater as sort of a play, what were the sort of quirky characters that you remember?
Quirky characters.
I mean, people like her. I mean, it doesn't matter. I just.
Well, Van Wyck Brooke's wife, she was a real pip. She was a real pip. Now, they moved here from Weston. Mm-hmm. I believe it was in the 40s that they moved here. And she, so they had a lot of very interesting people that would come to their home. Let's see now.
Why was she a character?
In her younger days, she had lived in a nudist colony.
Oh.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Glad I said it for you.
Yes. Yes, she had. She was a real pip. And she, as a matter of fact, when my aunt and uncle moved to Bridgewater in the late 60s, she had brought her two older children to school at Burnham, and then she went to the village store, parked, and went inside. And she came out, and there was a lady and her dog sitting in the back of her station wagon. So my aunt looked at the car, and she went back in. She said to Eleanor, she said, "There's a lady sitting in the back of my car with a dog." And Eleanor said, "Oh?" So Eleanor came outside, and she looked, and she goes, "Oh, that's Gladys. Yeah. Don't worry about that. She's harmless." So she says she probably wants a ride home. So my aunt said, "Oh, okay." So my aunt opens the door, and she says to her, she said, "Hi, I'm Vivian. Who are you?" And she goes, "Oh, I'm Gladys." And she says, "And what can I do for you?" And she said, "You can drive me home." And my aunt said, "Okay, where do you live?" And she says, "You see that big house over there in the corner?" And my aunt said, "Yeah." And she says, "I live there." I'm like, "Okay, then." So she brought her home. She also would frequent the churches on Sundays with her cat. And she would go to the services at both St. Mark's and at the Congregational Church. And the cat was allowed in the church. She was a real pip. I had a friend who was a caregiver for her. In the 80s. And Carol said, yeah, she was a very interesting lady. They were very good friends with F. Scott Fitzgerald, okay. Who wrote The Gatsby. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they were here, he and his wife. Frederick March, he was a frequent visitor here.
He had a house in New Milford at one point in time.
He did. Yes, yes, on West Meeting House Road, mm-hmm. just down the street from where my relatives lived, because my great grandparents had like an 80-acre mm-hmm. dairy farm on West Meeting House. So most of their children, they divided up the parcels and they built homes. And it was not too far from where my Aunt Mary lived.
Well, I grew up on Meeting House Terrace.
Oh.
And so my dad always used to talk about mm-hmm. Marsh.
That's a beautiful, beautiful area
yeah,
over there.
Yeah, it's really pretty. It's very, very pretty.
As a matter of fact, Diane von Furstenberg yep. Purchased my grandparents' property from my Aunt Josie.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, when my...
what was the last name? What was her last name?
Her last name was Gowell.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Josie and Frank.
So I... This doesn't belong in the interview, but I worked with June Gowell. Who her husband was the nephew. A nephew of Mr. the Gowells.
Oh, forevermore. Yeah, because they had a beautiful farm up the way, which was near where they have, like, the chapel. Yeah. And so when my grandmother wanted to live in the old homestead, because her father had built that in the late 20s, it was right around when Candlewood Lake was being completed. That's when her father built that home.
Oh, wow.
1928, 1929, something like that. Yeah. And so Diane von Furstenberg's her property abutted their property. So she would climb over the stone wall, because she lived up on Aspetuck Ridge, and she would climb over the stone wall. She would walk down, and she'd say to my aunt, she'd say, any chance that you're ever considering to sell this, please keep me in mind. And she kept coming occasionally and coming and coming and coming. And finally, Josie had said, you know, maybe the time has come for me to let go of this property. So the stipulation was that she had... life use of the house, and I think she 1 or maybe 2 acres, yeah, and then sold off everything else. And my nephew was the engineer that Diane von Furstenberg had hired to put in, like, the gazing pond and the private cemetery and all. And Paulie had no idea that this was actually his great great grandparents' property. So when we were at a memorial for my brother in April of 2010, I was saying, gosh, Paulie, you've done so well with your company. And he owns Howland Surveying in New Milford. And I said, that was pretty fascinating with what you've done for Diana von Furstenberg, you know. And I said, did you know that your great-great-grandparents had owned that property? And he was like, wow, yeah, no.
Because she intends on being buried on that property, correct?
Correct. Yeah. She said it's the closest thing to heaven is the area where she lives, yeah. And she's keeping it all open space. Yeah.
So, I mean, are there any other stories that you'd like to share? Anything, any other memories you'd like to share with us?
You know, I'm glad that the Burnham School is still being kept intact. I mean, I realize that now it's a real struggle because the population is kind of dwindling with the young people and everything. And I was, you know, I was thinking, wow, I mean, there's so few students. And I guess what they're doing is they're bringing outside tuition to kind of keep them going. I know even Danbury had approached Burnham, but because the transportation would have been such a,
So I think it's, they're being so creative with it. I mean, it's even they're merging the grades, and I think it's actually worked out really well. I mean, the energy over there is really positive. And what's a town without a school?
Exactly. My class of 72 was the first class to go to Washington when it was regionalized, where it was Bridgewater, Roxbury, and Washington. And Cheska and I were reminiscing about that, where... So anybody that was 71 and up stayed in New Milford.
Okay.
And then 72 and beyond, we all went to Washington. So at that point, we kind of, you know, went a little bit different ways because she was in a different high school than I was. You know, we still kept connected on the weekends and all, but the continuity was a bit different. But... that was wonderful. The bus drivers were phenomenal. Yeah, we had some really cool bus drivers. Frank Colburn had actually lived up the street from us, and I think he worked on the highway department. Your father worked on the highway department.
My grandfather, yeah.
Your grandfather, yes, yeah. Your grandfather. He was very good to my brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a wonderful guy, And I love when they used to tar the roads. Oh my God, that was like fantastic. You know, they'd come with these sprayers on the back of the truck, and then they come with a sand truck and mm-hmm. sand it, and then nobody could move because you had to wait until it had like procured. Right. It's like, oh my God, you know, it's like, yeah. And the mailman was George Roberts.
Oh, okay.
And that's how Mary Roberts became Mary Roberts.
Right.
Yeah. But prior to that, she was my third grade teacher, Mrs. Hibbard. And I loved the school. Mrs. Wheaton was the second grade teacher at the time that we moved here.
Okay.
And she was like grandmotherly and very nurturing and everything. And people would ask me, you know, who was your favorite teacher growing up? And I said, oh, hands down, without question, Cornelia Wheaton. Oh, well, who is she? Well, she was my second grade teacher. And they go, your second grade teacher was the most important? Yeah, because, you know, for me, I was leaving my little community with all of my friends, and I was going to have to start all over again. Mm-hmm. Here I was seven, and I was thinking, what am I going to do, you know? And she was like, she taught me about the birds. She was like the mimeo machine, mm-hmm. where they yeah. would mimeo up. Yeah, and there were the sheets with this... the specific information about each bird,
mm-hmm.
and she was very artistic, and with colored chalk she would draw the calendar for each month in the corner of the blackboard. Yeah, so that was really cool. So and then when I moved up to third grade, I'd always like to pop into her room to see what she had drawn on the board, you know, for that month. Yeah. Thanksgiving was like the cornucopia.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. That was cool. Mrs. Hibbard had the phone etiquette, which was like a really super cool thing. So she had these two phones and these long wires, and one child would sit out in the hallway and the other would sit in the classroom, and then we'd dial up the number, and then she would teach us how to use a directory and how to actually answer the phone and what was proper phone etiquette. And that had popped out at me when I had stopped in at that building on Church Street.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah, it is. It really is. It's like something that kids nowadays don't even have any idea about. You know, I mean, there was a whole different way of communicating. That's why when I took my little guys that I watch, Ben and Maddie, to mm-hmm. this building, I showed them what a directory was. And I've also gotten them a dictionary for Valentine's mm-hmm. Day. Several years ago, I got them a dictionary. And I showed them how to use the telltales and how to actually search. Because kids don't really know what books are, because, I mean, the computer is like everything. Mm-hmm. So if you want information, you just go to the computer and you pop it in and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, there's really something to be said to having a book and holding it in your hand and reading mm-hmm. what is there. Yeah. I take them to the library every week, you know, and they get books and videos and what have you. But I think it's so important for people to really spend time in the library and just, you know, I visit libraries throughout the state. I just find it very fascinating how they're set up, what their different, you know, yeah, their different programs mm-hmm. that they offer and all. Yeah.
It's the university of the people.
It is. And, you know, I like that there's still a library intact, you know. So my friend Cheska, who lives in Manhattan, she spends a lot of time at the library that's close by to where she is. Yeah, so it's a wonderful institution. Yeah.
Well, I think this is exactly what we're looking for. I appreciate you coming down and chatting with us. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stop recording,
mm-hmm.
And thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.